According to NSTA reviewer Jacob Lickenstaff, biology and physical science are among the hoard of shiny science concepts adventurers may find in the latest installment of The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
In the interest of full disclosure, I must begin by saying that I have read The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings several times. I've even read the extra stuff at the back of The Return of the King, so I'm pretty familiar with Middle-earth and the timeline created by Tolkien in the books. I enjoyed the Lord of the Rings films in spite of the changes from the books and the long run times. I went to The Desolation of Smaug expecting action, crazy elf stunts, and some changes from the book that I disagree with. I got all three in abundance. I'll leave aside my concerns about the quality of the film for now and concentrate on some fun that biology, physics, and chemistry teachers can have with scenes in the movie. Now, for those of you not quite as familiar with Middle-earth as I am, The Hobbit is a story of Bilbo Baggins' journey to the Lonely Mountain with a group of 12 dwarves and a wizard by the name of Gandalf. The dwarves hope to retake their kingdom under the mountain by defeating the dragon Smaug, who has been living there for decades. In the first film, Bilbo, the hobbit of the title, found a ring of invisibility, but did not share his discovery with others in the group. In The Desolation of Smaug, the dwarves and Bilbo travel through Mirkwood to Lake Town and then on to the Lonely Mountain. Bilbo saves them all from giant spiders, releases them from the dungeons of the wood elves, and makes a solo trip into the dragon's lair. In the depths of Mirkwood, Bilbo and the dwarves encounter giant spider webs and the spiders who wove them. One of the first things Bilbo does when he comes across the web is to pluck it with his finger, which sends a vibration through the web and lets the spiders know exactly where they are. Though the spiders in the movie are far larger than any on Earth, their use of vibrations of the web structure is what real spiders do. Now, real spiders also can distinguish between isolated plucking of the web and the motions of a struggling insect, and that's pretty useful since no one wants to respond to repeated false alarms. Next, I want to bring up two calculations that physical science teachers could have students do based on scenes in The Desolation of Smaug. The first looks at buoyancy and the size of a barrel you would need to float a dwarf down a river.
Into the barrels, quickly. Are you mad? They'll find us.
No, they won't. I promise you. Please, please, you must. Trust me.
The second is related to the molten gold that Smaug is drenched with near the end of the film. Both of these questions require several assumptions in order to even do the calculation, so at best they're approximations. I'll talk through my assumptions here and the calculations in the podcast, but I recommend looking at the print or online versions to examine the details of these calculations. Now, dwarves in The Hobbit are shorter than humans, but so muscular and stocky that I think it's reasonable to assume they weigh about the same as an average adult, so I'll use 70 kilograms for the mass of a dwarf. I was able to find some information about wine barrels made of oak online, so I'll use that data as a starting point. Now, there are many sizes of wine barrel, but a fairly typical one holds 225 liters of wine and has a mass of about 55 kilograms when empty. This means that the barrel and the dwarf together would have a mass of 125 kilograms, or weigh about 1,200 newtons. If the barrel and dwarf are to float, they'll have to displace an amount of water that weighs 1,200 newtons, and that's about 125 liters of water. Since the barrel's designed to hold 225 liters of wine, that should be no problem. In fact, the barrel would float just a bit more than halfway submerged in the water. That's great if you're sitting in a swimming pool or a still pond, but as the dwarves are riding down some pretty rough rapids, they'd be very likely to tip over, take on water, and sink. I think Tolkien knew this about barrels, so in the book, Bilbo packed the dwarves into the barrels and closed the tops, making it harder to breathe, but much easier to float. Later, Bilbo ventures deep into the Lonely Mountain into the lair of Smaug, searching for an important jewel, the Arkenstone. Initially, he finds only a giant pile of gold and isn't even aware of a dragon sleeping buried in the treasure hoard. Without the benefit of the advice found in the Harry Potter books, Bilbo tickles the sleeping dragon, bringing to life some amazing animation and initiating the final action sequence of the film. The dwarves come to Bilbo's rescue when they hear the dragon wake, and they trick Smaug into lighting their long dormant furnaces. Just a few minutes later, they have cast a huge gold statue of the king under the mountain. This got me thinking about just how much gold there is in the world. Now, I know The Hobbit takes place in Middle-earth, not really on our Earth, but I'll use what we know about our Earth in this calculation. All the gold ever mined on Earth would fit into a cube 20 meters on a side. Knowing that gold has a density of about 19 grams per cubic centimeter, we can figure out that that's about 1.5 times 10 to the 11th grams of gold. Now, if we assume that dwarves were working with pure gold, how much energy would it take to heat it all up and melt it? We have to do this problem in two parts. First, figure out how much energy it takes to warm the gold from its initial temperature, which I'll say is 20 degrees Celsius, to its melting point, about 1,065 degrees Celsius. Then, how much energy it takes to melt the gold. The energy that goes into melting a solid is usually called the heat of fusion, and depends on the material and the mass. But as the temperature doesn't change during melting, there's no change in temperature. Gold has a specific heat of 1.29 joules per gram degree Celsius, and a heat of fusion of 63 joules per gram. When I complete this calculation, I get 3 times 10 to the 13th joules, or about half the energy released by the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima. This is a truly huge amount of energy, and more, I think, than even dwarf furnaces could produce in a few minutes. Students could use the definition of a watt, 1 joule per second, to figure out the power output of the furnace needed to do this in 5 minutes. High school science teachers can find connections to how spiders build their webs, buoyancy, and calorimetry in The Hobbit, Desolation of Smaug.
For more of Dr. Blickenstaff's reviews, go to the NSTA website and search for Blick on Flicks.
Truly, the tales and songs fall utterly short of your enormity, O Smaug, the stupendous.